E-Bikes Community Advisory Committee, September 10th, 2019.
As you know, back in December, we had a public workshop on e-bikes, and we had well over 100 people attend. With many issues that were brought up, people's concerns, and also support for e-bikes. And stemming from that, our board of directors in March of this year decided to convene a citizens advisory committee. And we subsequently posted a process for applications. And so we collected applications over a period of time, and in May, we went back to the board with our recommended members from the applications that were submitted. And between May and today, we contracted with a third-party facilitator, which you'll learn more about in a moment, to help with the collaborative process for these meetings. And so with that, I just have a couple of ground rules for the audience. We do have speaker cards at the back of the room. They're orangey pink in color. If you would like to speak during public comment, which is on the agenda towards the end of the agenda, we ask that you fill out a speaker card. You don't have to give us your full name or address, as this is not a board meeting. Just your first name is fine. And then depending on how many people sign up to speak, that will dictate how long we would be able to allow you to speak. But we are going to stick to the schedule and hopefully get out of here by 7:30. With that, I want to go ahead and pass it over to Sean Horn, our watershed manager, and he's going to kick things off and then start with introductions, and then we'll go to some presentation.
So good evening, everyone. Thank you again for presenting. Just a couple things to start out. If we can direct our speaking to this side of the room so that we can help with everyone understanding how we are communicating on this topic tonight, that would be much appreciated. So to start off, we're going to go around the table and do introductions, and then Brett and I are going to do a short presentation before we hand over the CAC to Sam to kind of facilitate the rest of the meeting for the evening. And really, we're going to be going over the charter, which we've sent you, which kind of lays out the rules for the CAC that we're developing and what our goals are. And then that's in draft form currently, so you'll have an opportunity to start to provide input into that. And it's really based on the assessments that you've done with him to date. So I'm Sean Horn, I'm the Watershed Manager here at MMWD.
My name is Peter Quinnancy.
Debbie Raffel.
Is that all you want, just a name? Okay, I'm noted as.
Sure does.
I'm kind of curious what people's experience are, what they're doing here, but.
Yeah, we can start there.
I need to see a face when you speak. So if somebody speaks out of turn, I'm going to hear noise, but I'm not going to hear anything.
Okay. So why don't we start over and we'll just
and
do...
If you could slow down.
Okay. Your name and then a little bit about you and why this is of interest to you. That'd be great. So Peter, do you want to start?
My name is Peter Fennelson. I'm from Mill Valley, and I've spent most of my life in and around the MMWD bordering lands, and I continue to join to this day, and so this is a proposal is quite a change of use, and I think it's something that we all need to look at, and I want to be part of, you know, investigating it and working together with people to come up with what we can and recommendations in the format that we're doing it.
Yeah, I agree with that. My name is Debbie Raffel, and I'm trained as a biologist, plant ecologist, government by profession. I've been in local government for 25 years, as well as state government, resident of Terra Linda, and a mountain biker myself. And just as Peter said, I am a big fan of our open space and of our public space and want to see what we can accomplish together.
Okay, I'm Nona Dennis, a 60-year resident of Mill Valley, or as a planning consultant, doing a lot of CEQA, NEPA, that is environmental work, for some 25 years, retired in 98. And since that time, I've been very much involved in Marin Conservation League. Mount Tam's my backyard, probably more the south-facing, east-facing side than the north side. But I have, I think I represent the what I call the silent majority, those people on foot, and an elder population also. I'll qualify, I think.
I'm Robert Eichsted. I live at Larkspur, and I represent the general community.
I'm Bill Abright. I'm a 47-year-old resident of Marin County. I'm a hiker, mountain biker, birder, naturalist. I'm interested in the lakes. I've been enjoying the watershed since 1971. I'm interested in meeting with this group and trying to sort out the policy for e-bikes in the watershed.
Thank you. My name is Jonathan Freeman. Lived in Marin 25 years. I've been involved with nonprofits for 35 years or so, all different kinds. Everything ranging from hearing loss to dance troops to protection of the Amazon. And currently I'm president of the board of the Law Library, and we run a clinic twice a week for people who have to represent themselves, because more than half of our patrons have to do that. They can't afford lawyers. My attraction to this committee was that I'm an advocate of the outdoors, and I'm also an avid biker, and I wanted to be able to see how we could bring those together.
I'm Gail McMillan. I live in Lucas Valley. I'm a retired social worker. I'm a volunteer at China Camp State Park, and 13 years at Wild Care. And China Camp is also experiencing e-bikers coming on, so what you decide here is important to us also.
My name is Sierra Salen. I was born here, but I think I'm just visiting this planet. I'm interested in all of it. The more time I can spend at the bay, at the ocean, or on Tam, and away from the people, the better off I am. I ride a bike as much as I can, partly because I'm in a good mood if I'm on a bike and if I'm in a car. I rode from Fairfax, and they're doing work on White Hill, and Fairfax was bumper to bumper all the way through downtown, and a person could walk from downtown past the Good Earth quicker than they were driving today. So honestly, I think I got here quicker on a bicycle than in a car. And I realized that there's issues between bikers, hikers, and everything else on the mountain. If you read the IJ, you've seen all the stuff about the federal lands and e-bikes, which have already been in the news, and there's just there's a lot of opinions, a lot to work on.
I'm Ellie Cohen. I'm almost 30-year resident of Marin. I live in San Anselmo now. I serve on the San Anselmo Sustainability Commission. For the past 20 years, I've been the CEO of Point Blue Conservation Science, and I'm now the new CEO of the Climate Center based out of Santa Rosa. And I moved to Marin because of the beautiful lands here and the hiking and spending a lot of time on district lands. I love e-bikes, but I actually have never mountain biked. I'm really a street e-biker and enjoy the trails for regular hiking and nature watching. And I'm very interested to figure out how to do what is best for the community and for nature together. So I'm excited to be part of this with everybody.
Great. Oh, I introduced myself. Yeah, Crystal Yasmin. I'm staff here at MMWD, and I'll be sitting in on all of the meetings and listening to everybody's input, and I'm eager to hear where we go with this journey over the next few months.
My name is Brett Pettisich. I've been a park ranger on Mount Tamil Pines for the Water District for the past 7 years. Today is actually my 7-year anniversary for working here. So I'm here to help any way I can and to bring my experience up on the mountain and what we do up there to the conversation here.
And Sam, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I've had the privilege of speaking to most of you on the phone. I'm Sam McGill. I'm a facilitator from Sacramento State University's Consensus and Collaboration Program. And the district brought us in to help, as I think Sean mentioned early off, help manage the collaborative process and make sure that we move through the meetings in an orderly fashion, but most importantly, get all of your input in such a way that it's useful for the board to ultimately make its final decisions on e-bike access in the watershed. So we'll be presenting some information very shortly. The district will have some slides first on just a general overview, and then I'll talk to all of you a little bit about what I heard during those assessment interviews, and then some thoughts on how the process should move forward between now and the end. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. So there's two items in front of all of you. There's an agenda for the meeting, and for the audience, there's agendas on the back table if you haven't gotten one. And then there's also the draft charter in front of you, and Sam's going to go into this later in the meeting. So I'm going to hand it off to Brett to start us with a short presentation.
All right, so this is a little outline for what we're going to be going over in this PowerPoint presentation. We're going to talk about what our current Water District MMWD code or ordinance is regarding e-bikes, or kind of the letter of the law. Then we're talking about the current enforcement strategy, which is kind of the spirit of the law. Watershed observations, things that me as a park ranger and our whole kind of ranger staff sees on a day-to-day basis. We're out there, as you may or may not know, as park rangers, we work on the watershed. We're out on the fire roads. We work in a law enforcement capacity, fire-related capacity, EMTs, and we also handle search and rescue. So we try to be out in the right places at the right time, and we're out there. We're seeing where e-bikes are, how often they're used, where they're used, at least to maybe the best of our ability and knowledge at this point in time. So I'm trying to bring that to the table and present a little bit on that. I'm going to pass it over to Sean at that point. He'll talk about kind of the public workshop that you guys went over how many months ago?
Back in December.
And then we'll go over the Citizens Advisory Committee overview and kind of continue down this list here. Sean will kind of bring you to the end there. So here it is, the MMWD code as it is written. This is the letter of the law. You can read it for yourself, but essentially no person shall operate any motor vehicle, including but not limited to cars, trucks, motorcycles, and as you see in bold, motor-driven cycle, motorized bicycle, motorized scooter, self-balancing motorized personal transportation vehicle, or similar vehicles on district lands except upon public roads or parking lots. So if we're going by the letter of the law, that's kind of where e-bikes stand, and that's why we've taken our current stance, which is our regulation signs currently have emblems clearly showing that all e-bike use is illegal on district lands currently except upon public roads or parking lots. And we came to that determination based on the letter of the law from what our ordinance currently states. So enforcement, what we've seen, kind of how we're interpreting the letter of the law and bringing it for the spirit of the law, what we're trying to bring forward to you guys. First and foremost, our current enforcement strategy is education. Given the unprecedented nature of e-bike use in the watershed, the initial approach is to contact people who are on e-bikes and let them know what our policy states. And we're centered on educating them and how it relates to e-bike enforcement. So we want to stop you, inform you what our rules are, why our rules are currently that way, answer any questions you might have. That's kind of the first step, is to educate. The second step is a verbal warning. So as a ranger out on scene, if we stop you on an e-bike, next step is after the education, our next course of action is Our next course of action involved is that warning e-bike users that continued violation of the ordinance would result in a citation. And how can we kind of back that up? What we do is it's called a field interview. We would contact you, and we'd gather your name and information, and we have basically a running list of people who have been previously educated on what our current e-bike policy is. And we hold them accountable after a warning was issued by a ranger, meaning if you've been warned, and we have it on record, if we catch you again, a citation would be issued. So users who have been warned and continue to violate the ordinance were issued a citation. That's kind of our current enforcement strategy. So observations.
Excuse me, could you slow down?
Yeah.
I'm missing about 20% of what you're saying because you're mumbling when you speak too fast. Thank you.
Absolutely. So first of the observations is citations issued. And what we have is there's been one citation issued, which was challenged and upheld in traffic court for someone who was cited for using an e-bike after previously being warned that they were not permitted to ride e-bikes on watershed lands. So that's kind of the first observation, is most people who have been warned for e-bike use were not seeing a reoccurrence, at least based on our experiences in the field. So warnings issued, on average, there are approximately 3 e-bike warnings issued per month. That's a total estimation, but where that's coming from is we're seeing more e-bikes than that. But for people who are actually stopped and have not been educated before, that's what we're seeing. It's about 3 people who are being warned to and educated to be made aware that e-bikes are illegal on the watershed. The other reason why there's only 3 warnings issued is this: the next thing we're seeing is the ADA compliance. So type 1 e-bikes are currently considered an ADA mobility device and therefore are permitted anywhere an ordinary bicycle would be permitted on watershed lands. So if we stop someone and they say that the e-bike is an ADA device, that's kind of as far as our conversation goes at that point. So those people aren't considered in the warnings because technically they're not out of compliance. Single track trails. So single track trails, for those who, just to make the, to designate one from another, a fire road is anything that a vehicle can travel on. A single track trail is what you find. It's only permitted for foot traffic or equestrian use in some cases. So over the past 12 months, 2 e-bike users have been cited or specifically warned for illegally riding on watershed trails. So we've cited about 35 bikes total over the course of the past 12 months, and 2 out of those 35 have been people who are using e-bikes on single track trails. And then the next category here is reckless bicycling. So we've received a handful of complaints, and I know that it's a concern to people, from visitors with safety concerns regarding e-bike users riding uphill at speeds that would otherwise be impossible. So we do have a code that covers this. It's Water District Ordinance 90402B, and it's reckless bicycling. We have not cited anyone at this point for that because we haven't been in the right place at the right time, but we have received multiple complaints regarding this being an issue. Yes, sir.
ADA compliance versus single track trails. Does ADA compliance cover every trail? In other words, if I'm on the hill and I say my bike is an ADA vehicle.
If you could not walk otherwise, then you could technically ride your bike on a single track trail, but we're not seeing many, that doesn't really seem to be an issue at this point in time because bikes in general are not permitted on single track trails. So if you couldn't walk on the trail, if you were unable to based on a condition, then you could technically ride a bike on it, but that do you kind of see where the disconnect is with that?
Yeah.
Am I answering your question? I'm sorry.
No, but I understand the disconnect.
Okay.
So
for
what
I'm
trying to find out is if the our bikes not allowed.
Yes. No, there's no bicycling.
I didn't even finish my question.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
Are bikes not allowed on single track trails?
Yes. Yes, you are correct that bikes are not allowed on single track trails.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
So now, if that's the case, I can see the disconnect. Does ADA compliance mean that an e-bike is allowed on such a trail?
Let me stop for just a moment. There are situations where it would be dangerous for somebody to ride a bicycle of any type on a trail. And the district can decide that a trail, that your safety would be jeopardized if you were to ride an e-bike on that trail. We have yet to determine which trails are a safety hazard for e-bikes or not. So it's still, that's an area that would need to be explored.
And if I can just jump in, throughout the presentation, if there are issues like that that come up that we need to investigate further as a committee, mm-hmm. I'm going to be keeping a running list of those, and we can work with all of you between the meetings to get the answers to questions exactly like Mr. Friedman's.
Could, so it sounds like it's an open question then.
Could I put into this
part? I don't know if excuse me, I'm sorry. You're talking about the danger, and there's a thrill as well. So but I think it's a question that needs to be determined.
Thank you. So if as additional issues like that come up, I'm keeping a running list, and we'll continue to run through those.
Could I add to your list that we take a look at policy 7, number 7, which addresses all single-track, in my interpretation, addresses all single-track trails on Water District lands and prohibits bicycles.
Certainly, and I would ask if people can hold questions. You'll see a lot of these issues coming up when I get to the assessment interviews that you walk through, because many of you touched on those conversations when I spoke to you separately. I know that we're on a tight time frame, though. If we can kick it back to Brett and Sean to run through the remainder of their slides, we'll have time for conversation afterwards.
And I'm actually going to kick it to Sean at this point.
So thank you, Brett. Brett kind of outlined what the issue that the district has is and why we've been convening these conversations around e-bikes. So in December, we had a workshop. And the workshop's intent was to provide the community with an opportunity to provide guidance and input to the district on how to start to evaluate e-bikes on the watershed. And at that public workshop, we had a number of themes that came out of the comments that we received from the community. We had a total of 132 people attend that meeting in December. And then after the meeting was over, we understood that we didn't get all of the community's input who may not have been able to attend the meeting. So we allowed for about a 3-week period of comment letters to come in. And so through that period, we received a number of about 81 additional emails. And so we filtered through those emails and those comments that we received at the public workshop, and we evaluated them, and they came into these primary themes. And these themes are things that we want this group to kind of consider, and we've started to integrate into the CAC charter as part of the schedule and the topics that we're suggesting we investigate further as part of this process. So the primary themes that we saw during those workshops were relating to environmental concerns, recreation and trails, safety enforcement, and ADA and senior access. And so I'm going to go through a couple more slides here that really get into those themes and some of the comments that we heard during that workshop, because we want those comments to really be in your mind and you thinking from those perspectives, since that is what we've heard from the community to date. So we did hear generally that there was acknowledgement that e-bikes are and can be used as another power-driven mobility device, and that we should be considering them for ADA access. Some of the comments that we heard that were pro e-bikes related to the use of e-bikes for seniors to encourage access and continue to have that access, to allow all bikes to e-bikes to use fire protection roads. Those are the natural surface roads that we currently drive vehicles on. Also, to allow e-bikes limited access to a number of protection roads. That was kind of a comment from the pro side that we might be able to control use in that way. E-bikes should be allowed with a permit. This was a way to kind of regulate and maybe have a way to actually generate potentially revenue for maintaining trails associated, or excuse me, protection roads associated with the use of e-bikes. E-bikes could be limited. There's acknowledgement from both sides, and the pro side acknowledges as well that there's limited data on e-bikes. E-bikes are a new thing. They've become more popular in recent years, and there's not a lot of information out there that's really relevant to the kind of environment that we're managing on the watershed. So there's limited data. E-bikes should be allowed, and we should be encouraging trail etiquette. This is something that we think for all users, but there was acknowledgement that e-bikes as well should be kind of thought about in these terms. E-bikes do encourage recreational opportunities. So those are some of the comments that we heard from the pro side. From the opposition side, there were some concerns regarding e-bikes causing environmental damage to wildlife, to trails, impacting water quality and such. There was concerns that this is going to create unsafe trail conditions, impact other user groups, and potentially more illegal trail usage. There was also some concerns that there could be a wildfire risk from e-bikes on the watershed. There was recognition that, you know, e-bikes within the urban environment have become a tourism component, and that this could happen on the watershed, and that would increase usage. There were some concerns that it would strain the financial resources that the watershed does have, and that we don't have enough resources to enforce or maintain the fire protection roads that these bikes would be using. There's acknowledgement again that there's not enough data on this issue quite yet. So those are kind of the comments that we heard from the group. So, you know, we really have these four primary topics that we want to explore and focus conversation around with this group. So these are kind of falling in this environmental, this recreational, this safety, and ADA. And some of the bullet points here are just kind of expressing the concerns that fall within them, in that we can't talk about them, you know, just as environmental issues. There's a whole complex set of environmental issues, and that's true for recreation and trails, safety and enforcement, and ADA. And so that's why we've thus far framed this CAC around these four topics, and what we're going to talk about later in today's meeting is to try to get agreeance on that approach and the schedule that we have, and then get some guidance from you on what we want to focus on during those meetings on those topics. So the e-bike process and the formation of the CAC, as I said, we had this workshop to get community input, and then we've went to the board kind of explaining what we had heard from the community and got the direction to form a community advisory committee to help us develop some next steps and recommendations on how we can evaluate this further. So what this group will be doing is focusing on those topics and then making a set of recommendations. Staff will then be taking those recommendations to the board for consideration, and the board can evaluate those recommendations in consideration to the district's mission and goals and make the determination on what the next steps are going to be. So with that, you know, we're really excited to have this group here to evaluate these issues and go into detail on these topics. And as you know, Sam has interviewed all of you as part of the charter, and we're going to kind of move into that, and he's going to review what he found in those assessments and what the charter is currently saying as far as what we're trying to line out for this whole community advisory committee.
Great. Thank you, Sean. So as Sean mentioned, I'm going to run through the assessment that I conducted. That was of all of you committee members and the board members as well. If I haven't had the chance to talk to any board members or committee members, I certainly can afterwards to modify some of this content as needed. One of the things that's really important to note, all the questions that I asked all of you were very much tailored to this, that it's important to remember that we're talking very specifically about e-bike access issues here and not trail access more generally. I tried to tailor the questions as much as possible to that, and we'll keep kind of going back to that throughout this process. You'll see a lot of overlap in my slides between the content and the comments that were received at that December 11th workshop and the input that all of you provided as well, which shouldn't probably come as a surprise. I know many of you have been involved in this for a while, and your comments are reflected in this content. So just very quickly, as I mentioned, I conducted an assessment. These assessments are generally used to gauge your initial interest in a particular topic, in this case, e-bikes. They really provide a snapshot in time of your opinions right now on the major topics as you understand them. We fully expect that some of those beliefs and comments they've received will change over time. In fact, that's what we really hope. That's kind of the purpose of this process, to educate each other and come to some actionable recommendations, as Sean mentioned in his final slide. Individuals were asked questions in four primary categories. The first was just around your general background and interest in trail access issues, your history working with the district, some initial thoughts you have on e-bike issues, and really kind of the unique characteristics of e-bikes versus conventional bicycles. That's going to be an important theme that keeps coming up. You know, how is this new and emerging technology, at least as it's applied to the district's watershed, different from conventional bicycles that are allowed and have been allowed for quite some time? And then finally, and most importantly for the discussion today, I wanted to get your thoughts on the advisory committee process as a whole, including your recommendations on the best way that all of you can come to agreement. There's a lot of kind of diverse opinions and ideas represented on this committee, and to the extent possible, we want to try to get to some level of agreement.
I'm Sean, I have a question. Could you go back to the previous slide?
Sure, and I will ask if you can just hold questions until the end of slides, as Mr. Freeman did, that'd be great. My name's Sam.
I'm sorry.
That's quite all right.
So sorry.
That's okay.
I hate that. Stakeholder groups.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Which bullet?
Top, the first sentence under assessment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so broadly, the district reviewed applications that were received and tried to come up with balanced representation based on your either preference for e-bike access or concerns you might have about it. So in this case, those were the two primary stakeholder groups. But represented on this group as well, you have hikers. There is one gentleman who sort of comes from more of an equestrian background. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to attend today. But there's also bicycle enthusiasts, both conventional and e-bikes. So that's kind of what I'm referring to.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right. The next series of slides just kind of outlines some of the findings from the interviews that I did. I'll run through these fairly quickly. We want to give you more time to actually discuss some of the issues than focus on the slides. But the first thing I asked all of you was just general interest in trail access. As you heard in your introductions, every one of you is a longtime Marin resident. You know the watershed very well. You recreate in the area. You live in the area. So that was one of the key characteristics of why you all were selected. The general user groups that were that are represented include bicyclists, hikers, equestrians, and the one that's missing on there is just general lovers of nature and the watershed. That shouldn't come as a surprise. Again, it was reflected in your opening comments. And many of you fit into multiple user groups. In terms of history working with the district itself, the responses varied, but I know many of you have worked with staff on this issue specifically or others in the past. I know that a number of you have also worked with the board, both in a personal and professional capacity in one way or another. And then finally, and this is probably important to note, almost all of you are not here representing a specific professional organization. That was true nearly universally across the board. And one of the reasons that this is a citizens advisory committee and not a representatives from engineering firms, bicycle manufacturers. The goal was really to get broad representation from people directly impacted by these issues. Keep hitting the wrong way. Some of the findings, e-bikes and perceived environmental impacts. Many of you, a significant majority even, mentioned that Class 1 e-bikes at this point do not appear to pose unique environmental challenges different from conventional bikes. But the important thing to remember is that objective data on that is very much lacking. One thing that I heard from, I think, every single one of you is that, you know, there may be some supporting evidence that says they do cause things like erosion, fire risk due to batteries, etc. But we need to do a little bit more thinking about that. We need to actually get some of the neighboring land managers in to hear what they're doing and hear about their observations as well, to sort of, to some degree, divorce the problem from an emotional reaction that many of us may have about an issue and think about things as objectively as possible. So that's gonna be one of the goals and themes that I'll keep coming back to. One note on the fire piece, just because that came up in many of the discussions that I had. Folks noted that heavier bikes with wider tires and more torque could exacerbate environmental challenges. There was also the idea that e-bikes could cause a fire hazard from flammable batteries, though I understand this could potentially be offset because a lot of e-bikes might use a non-combustible battery, as opposed to those kind of hoverboard things that were really popular for a bit. But we want to find out more about that as we move through the process. A lot of you spoke on accessibility and ADA issues. It already came up today. It was reflected in the workshop results as well. Opinions on the use of e-bikes to address accessibility issues really varied. And I was kind of surprised here. There was a common theme, and this was true when I was talking to the board members and to all of you as well, that many of the observed e-bike users in the watershed already use conventional bikes and transition to e-bikes for accessibility reasons. Some participants, however, have feel that non-self-balancing bikes, such as an e-bike, aren't really appropriate for individuals with disabilities and could open up, you know, could open up a host of accessibility or emergency response issues. But it's important to note, several participants commented that the ADA supersedes local measures. You know, the district can't say something that goes against the auspices of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Brett's slides pointed to that already. So this is something that we'll continue to look into and explore the problem. Many of you mentioned that access to emergency services was listed as a concern. As these, as e-bikes allow us to get further and further into district watershed lands, there was a concern raised at the workshop that people would be further from emergency services, particularly within the ADA community. But most of you also acknowledge that there's not really any objective data on the specific issue.
I'm sorry, could you go back and say that again, please?
Yeah, so it was just access to emergency services was raised as a concern in the workshop and in my interviews with many of you, but most, if not all, of the folks that I spoke to around this table acknowledged that there's not really any objective data on this particular concern, so it's something that we're going to have to address as a committee and talk through specifically moving forward. Speed and safety issues. Again, this is one that came up in the workshop. Opinions really varied on this one, depending on sort of your background and your interest. It's important to note, and it was pointed out to me, that Class 1 e-bikes, which is kind of what we're focused on here, are limited to 20 miles per hour under battery power, so when they're on flat surfaces or traveling uphill. It was also pointed out that downhill travel is no different on an e-bike than it is on a conventional bike, at least if we're talking about Class 1. Again, those bikes that are limited to 20 miles per hour. Going uphill, sorry. A couple of you, though, did point out, and again raised in the workshop, that the primary safety concern might not be downhill travel, since the district already allows that on conventional bikes, but instead uphill travel. If all of a sudden you have a lot of people going uphill at the same rate of speed that they're going downhill, equestrians, hikers, and others may have to be looking over both shoulders at the same time. And, you know, that could potentially pose a challenge. So we're going to want to hear more about that as we move through the process as well.
Just a clarification, obviously we'll follow this when we get into individual areas, but a Class 1 e-bike is pedal assistant.
That's right.
It's not operating independently of pedaling. So it's, while somebody's pedaling, it's aiding, it's not, so that's not something that's powering up the hill.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be if the person is pedaling up the hill.
There's different levels of assist. You can have a high level of assist or a low level of assist. You can go fairly fast, but you're not going to go too fast up a hill unless you have a huge battery. And if you're on an e-bike, you're going to want to preserve your, the faster you use your battery going up a hill, the less power you're going to have, less distance you can cover. And most bikes aren't going to go uphill very fast or very far.
Right. And you're actually kind of reading my mind when we get to the topics that are going to need some explanation for the whole group. One of them is the actual science behind some of the e-bikes and how they actually work. I'm certainly not familiar with them, even though I am myself a bicyclist. And we're just going to need to learn a little bit more about what they can do and what they can't do. Participants did note that heavier e-bikes could cause more serious injuries if there was a collision with, say, a hiker. But, you know, as I think was accurately pointed out, if there's a heavier bicyclist on a conventional bicycle, that could easily offset that weight difference. So, again, it's just a matter of thinking about getting as much objective data as we can as you as a group start formulating your recommendations. One very positive thing, all of you who were familiar with the Slow and Say Hello campaign that I know is a partnership between many of the groups that you've worked with in the past, has been really positive, at least as far as conventional bicyclists. And it was suggested that, you know, some type of similar campaign, if not already in the works for e-bikes, could be a real benefit. On to enforcement. All participants listed enforcement as an issue. And I think every single one of you that I spoke to also noted that there are resource limitations with how much enforcement the district is capable of doing at any one time. I don't think that comes as a surprise, but it's something to remember as you start developing your recommendations. We just need to think about how realistic a brand new large enforcement effort could be. The really positive thing, and I can just say from personal experience, it is totally anecdotal, but I've certainly found the second bullet to be true, that everyone I spoke to noted that experienced riders in the watershed, all of the folks that I've run into on a regular basis, obey the rules and are pretty good stewards of it. That doesn't mean that everybody is. There are always people out there that are bad actors, and that was pointed out in the single track citations that Brett mentioned earlier. It does happen, and it will continue to happen, but it's not an e-bike specific issue.
You're referring to bicycles.
That's correct. Yeah. One of the big concerns, though, that people I think also accurately raised, is that if there is some new enforcement sort of protocol that the district adopts, many of you noted that e-bike enforcement really becomes a technical issue. It's hard to differentiate the difference between a class one, a class two, or a class three e-bike just by looking at it as it pedals by you. So that's something this group is also going to need to take a look at, since, at least as far as I know, you know, we're really looking at this first one, class one. Several participants noted that e-bikes are currently considered motorized vehicles under state law. And as it turns out, back in 2015, Assemblywoman Chu actually passed a bill. E-bikes are not considered motorized vehicles under state law, but as was pointed out in the presentation, they are under district code. So figuring out a way to address that potential, I don't even want to say conflict, but just difference in statute and regulation is going to be something that this group will probably want to consider.
Could you repeat that again about the state law?
Yeah, so under state law in 2015, the Assembly passed a measure and the governor signed. I'll get you the actual bill number, unless anybody knows it offhand. What's that?
It doesn't matter.
AB 1096. Anyway, e-bikes that have fully operable pedals and are under 750 watts are considered bicycles and not motorized. Okay, so on to more important things. As far as the recommendations that all of you had for the advisory committee itself, as I said right at the outset, many of you have noted the lack of objective data concerning e-bikes. There have been multiple suggestions for studies or pilot projects on fire roads that could be conducted to potentially accurately survey the volume of e-bike users. A number of you also mentioned that the advisory committee could be used to develop some type of licensing program for e-bikes. For anybody who's ridden in Tamarancho, you know, they hand out, you have to purchase a permit to ride on the lands there. There was a suggestion that something similar could be developed for e-bikes on district watershed lands. It is very important to notice that none of you, not a single one, be they board members or members of this advisory committee, recommended increasing access for e-bikes beyond fire roads. That's certainly an area of agreement that people should focus on. We're not talking about, you know, necessarily a new regime for e-bikes that much different than conventional bicycles. But, you know, to find out the answers to some of the big questions that you have, I think many, if not all of you, strongly recommended into looking how some of the neighboring land managers address this issue. As you all know, the Park Service is currently undergoing a 30-day review of allowing access, so that, you know, hopefully that will provide some direct data to this committee that you can look at, depending on, you know, the type of review that they conduct.
That's on paved and hard surface.
Oh, yeah.
Paved and hard surface multi-use paths.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Totally.
Thank you very much. The response was that's on paved and multi-use paths only. But there's other land managers as well. You have, you know, county lands, city lands, and of course the privately owned lands that people bicycle on now. And hearing some of their experiences could be very useful to this group moving forward. All right. Finally, one of my last slides just on findings here. I had asked questions about what you'd like to see as the district's role in your advisory committee process. And what mode of reaching consensus, what mode of reaching agreement you'd all like to see. Participants, you all agreed that staff should be represented at every meeting and really kind of function as a liaison with board members. That makes sense, won't come as a surprise. But to the question of agreement within this group, there were sort of three modes of consensus were provided by all of you. The first was, you know, it's important for any of your recommendations to represent complete consensus, but obviously that poses a lot of challenges as well. In groups with diverse opinions, it's not always possible to come to agreement on everything. So another one of the ideas that came up was what I'm sort of referring to as alignment with accountability. And if you remember the questions when I spoke to many of you, I had used the term consensus with accountability, but it was pointed out to me that the very term consensus can be off-putting to a lot of people, because it suggests that total agreement must be had on all issues. We could easily get bogged down on one small thing and end up not addressing some of the bigger things. So under this idea, the concept was that you know, if a majority of the group or a large number of you do agree on something, if there's a couple people who can't quite get to yes on a question, that's fine, it would be noted. It's an important data point for the board to consider. But you would then be responsible for providing an alternative as well. And I think folks were generally pretty supportive of that concept. And then finally, the other was kind of an alternatives models similar to CEQA analysis, which we don't want to get bogged down. We're not talking about a full environmental review or anything, but it was the same idea of having kind of like a preferred alternative and then a series of other alternatives and an explanation for why you were in favor or not in favor of a particular item. All right, so that's the end of the findings.
Could we have a copy follow-up of these slides?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah, so what our plan is to put all of the slides on the webpage that we currently have for e-bikes, as well as the charter once the group finalizes that. And then any you know, documents that we bring forward to the e-bike group, as far as things that we review, we would create a small library on that webpage. So that there's access to it. We'll also link all of the agenda items that come from the board meetings that have involved the e-bike discussions.
Yeah, so we'll definitely get those out. It's a fairly large file, so we didn't want to clog up your email inboxes, but it will be posted to the website. All right, so now I kind of want to shift gears. We went through all these interviews. We heard a bunch of great information from all of you. What I did was take much of that feedback and turn it into this charter. That will kind of represent a roadmap and a work plan for how you proceed as a group together. For members of the public, we wanted to give the committee members the opportunity to provide comments on it and refine it before we post it, but we will share that and it will also be posted to the website once it's final. Everybody seated around the dais should have a copy of this. It's separated into a number of specific sections, starting with project purpose and background, working through what your purpose and charge is. We talk a little bit about the schedule, and then really the bulk of it is about the actual advisory committee organization, how you are all selected, what we see as some of your responsibilities being on this committee, general ideas about public participation, and then, as far as you're concerned, probably most importantly, what responsibility does district staff have to you, and what, as your facilitator, what responsibilities do I have to all of you as well? We talked a little bit about decision-making protocols, again, how we expect to come to agreement on some of the sticky issues that you'll all discuss over the coming months, and then just a few final things on communication protocols, things like how you approach the press. Should an interview come up, do you represent the committee in your comments, or are you just speaking as an things like that. And then finally, a little bit about meeting summaries and some general ground rules I'm hoping folks can come to general agreement on. Given the limited amount of time, I don't want to spend a ton of time walking through this in detail. It's too much content to get through in 10 minutes. So what I'm really hoping is that you can all take some time immediately following this meeting. We can email this document out and you can send us comments directly on it. Yeah, please do.
Okay, so I did read it.
Thank you.
I'll share some of my comments offline, but one of the things that I had a question on the last page,
mm-hmm.
when you were talking about the behavior of our group, you said we are working through the chair of the CAC. Are we electing the chair?
Nope, that is a typo. My apologies.
Okay, it's on two of those bullets.
Yes.
Addressing comments through the chair.
Thank you. Yeah.
Where is that?
It's
on the ground rules on the
final ground rules. It's the second, third to the last, and fourth to the last.
My apologies. That was a typo, and that's why we're asking all of you to review
it. Same to protect the lake, so I think that's another typo.
Yeah, yes. Thank you. One note. Under section 2, the advisory committee purpose and charge, if you look at the third paragraph, it currently reads, as a formally chartered organization developed through appointment by the board of directors, the advisory committee and all of its decisions are subject to the Ralph M. Brown Act. That's actually incorrect.
Okay.
This group is an ad hoc body established by the board and district staff. As such, you're not subject to the specifics of the Brown Act, but it's the district's desire, if I understand it, and Crystal, Sean, Brett, and others, please do correct me if I'm wrong, that there's a strong desire to still maintain all of the same noticing requirements, get information out in a reasonable amount of time so that you have time to review it, so that members of the public can attend meetings and are aware of them before they happen. So I just wanted to make that note. That's something that I had put in there, and I was in error, so my apologies.
So could you repeat that, please? I was
sure. So I'm just referring to the first sentence of the third paragraph under section 2 mentions that this group is a formally chartered body and subject to the Brown Act, and that's not correct. This is an ad hoc committee, so you don't have quite the same level of restrictions that you would. That said, the district has made a commitment to making sure that all meetings are noticed in the same way and open to the general public to provide comments as well.
Do you have a comment on the opening?
Sure, yes, please.
On the opening background,
mm-hmm.
It appears to me that Marin County could also be called the birthplace of hikers,
mm-hmm.
starting around the turn of the century.
Sure.
So to limit it, I understand that we're talking about e-bikes, but I think we need to do this in the context of the larger visitors. There will be processions, on the part of visitors, all visitors,
mm-hmm.
to the watershed, and to limit the history to the birth of mountain biking, I think is to simply ignore that very large constituency that loves the mountain.
If I hear you correctly, Nona, you're referring to the fact that the watershed has been around for well over 100 years, much longer than mountain biking, correct?
Absolutely, and even the water district might not have had the support that it had from Town Pines Conservation Club and other and the hiking groups. Mm-hmm. That's really what supported the bond issue that created mm-hmm. the water district. Where's the important history?
That's an excellent point. We do want to make sure that it's more balanced and clearly reflects that there's other critical user groups and impact groups that have been around longer as well. If you have specific language on things like that, please do send it in, and we'll make sure to get it in updated version. Let me go around the table, Jonathan, real quick, and see if there's other questions from folks before we take a look at the schedule and the topics that we really want to focus on. Yeah, go ahead, Robert.
Robert Eichstedt. So Sean mentioned it in passing,
mm-hmm.
the water district's mission.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't appear here anywhere, and I would appreciate seeing that noted.
Excellent point, yeah. Any other general questions or comments before we take a look at the schedule and topics that we're hoping to ask?
Section 4,
sure.
CAC organization.
Mm-hmm.
The second sentence, No, I'm sorry, 1, 2, 3. It's a long sentence which ends with the phrase well-being of the lake.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, as you can see, there was a carryover. We used some of the same templates, and I think there were a few typos, so we'll correct all of that. I apologize.
What's lake?
We're not, I don't want to get into that.
Templates are the bane of our existence.
Right. So I do apologize for that typo. I'm very sorry that I didn't catch it sooner.
I think we should be concerned about the well-being of the lake, though.
We certainly should be. It's a different lake, though, in this case.
And then can you define what you mean by no stakeholder group can be completely inclusive?
Yeah. So this, you know, in the work that the facilitation work that I often do in my organization often does, we find that to the best of our ability, we try to balance membership to be generally representative of the community, of the interests that are affected by a specific topic. But it's very difficult to get absolutely every single person involved in a committee like this who may be interested in the issue. There's a myriad reasons why. One is just logistical. Having a committee of, you know, 50, 60, 70, 100 people poses unique challenges and makes things more difficult to come to agreement. But there's also always the possibility that there was some, and my apologies for using the term, niche interest area that we didn't really consider. If that's the case, certainly happy to hear about it and hear from them. But it's difficult to make sure that absolutely every interest imaginable is represented on the group.
Thank you. Participant selection,
mm-hmm.
footnote 3.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was cited.
Okay. So for anything like that, we'll certainly go through and do a cleanup. And like I said, my apologies if there's a couple of small kind of clerical errors in there. Please do feel free to send those in.
In that instance, we can reference the board meeting staff reports and minutes when the Citizens Advisory Committee was put together. So you'll have reference to that document.
Great. Thank you, Crystal.
I didn't know that in 4.2, our member responsibilities, I didn't know that we were assigned constituencies that we were represented.
Yeah, so this is another area that we wanted to talk to all of you about. Our understanding is that each of you do come from, and this is certainly reflected in the individual conversations I had with all of you, you do come in representing a point of view one way or another, whether in favor or not. And we're hoping that as advisory committee members, you are, and this is reflected in a number of places in the document, that you're speaking to other committee members, other community members in Marin and the affected area to hear some of their thoughts as well and bringing that input back to us. If that's a task that the committee feels isn't appropriate for this group, we can certainly make a modification, but I've often found that to be a very useful model. And to the extent that you are bringing in, you know, what you hear from the street, you know, from the general community back to this group, I think that could be very helpful. If it needs some additional clarification, instead of constituencies, which sounds, again, like you're representing a specific organization, we can change it to be more reflective of that. So at this point, I would ask that within 2 weeks, you send any feedback on the charter back to me, and I can make those changes and pass it by the district in advance of your next meeting. But what I'd really like to do is focus on page 2 of the document. There's a table right at the top there, and it's also reflected in this slide. It's our thinking, and yes, go ahead, Ellie.
It turns out I had seen this before, but October 8th is
Yom Kippur.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I can't come if we have it that night, and I sure would like to hear this. But
that's one of the points that I was going to bring up.
Yeah, okay.
We put the schedule together, and then I heard from a few folks that we probably need to change at least one of these. In general, though, our thinking is that meetings could be held on the second Tuesday of each month. The way that we've sort of broken apart this process, it's in 8 meetings. And the thinking was that 6 meetings would be organized around information gathering, identifying critical information gaps, and developing recommendations to address any specific impacts. And then we'd use the last two meetings to describe the pros and cons of any recommendations that have been developed to date, and then do a final review of materials. After which point, I would work with staff to compile a final report from this committee, and that's what would ultimately go to the board. So what we'd really like to hear from all of you now, with the next 10 minutes or so, is first, whether the schedule generally makes sense to all of you, and second, and probably most importantly, have we identified the correct topics here? These were what we pulled from the workshop, the December 11th workshop. It was reflected in Sean and Brett's slides. It was also reflected in all the conversations that I had with you. But I really want to get your feedback on the general topics that we've outlined here and here, whether there are others or whether some of these aren't correct. And then just one final note. Again, the October 8th meeting, I realize there's a holiday conflict. Staff's proposal is to hold it on Monday, October 7th instead. So the day before, to avoid that holiday conflict.
I'm sorry, what's the matter with the 8th of October?
There's a holiday. It's a Yom Kippur, and there's folks that can't.
Erev Yom Kippur.
Oh.
You're right.
I get it.
You're right.
Sam?
Yes?
I had mentioned that I'm going to be out of the country for most of October, and asked what the protocol would be in having a substitute person from that has many of the same opinions that I might, or information maybe, and is in attendance tonight.
Mm-hmm.
If I can substitute for one meeting another person.
You know, there's a kind of probably more restrictive than it needs to be process laid out in the charter, but if we can maybe just discuss it offline and with staff as well after the meeting.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sam.
Sorry.
The dates from the last four meetings are 2019.
Oh. Yep. Can you please repeat the
yes,
question?
The date in the next year needs to be changed to 2020.
It's like back in time.
We knew it.
I think we should go back in time.
Good catch. That's an important one. Go ahead, Debbie. And then
yeah, I don't understand. I just would like clarity on what accessibility issues means.
Yeah, so that accessibility and ADA was
ADA.
A concern that was repeatedly brought up, and I've generally been talking about those under the umbrella of accessibility generally.
You know, I did want to touch on that issue.
Sure, Ben.
And just briefly reflect.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry. Could you move forward?
Yeah.
He's coming back.
This is the initial meeting, so we're working out bugs on, you know, where we're going with it. I just wanted to share with the committee that I think as staff, we do need to think if ADA fits well in this venue and in this topic, given that it's really a complex and nuanced legal issue and not necessarily in the wheelhouse of this group. So anyway, let staff go back on that issue. I just didn't want to surprise you if we come back with a refinement and we end up not hitting ADA as hard in this group.
Thank you for that. I think Ellie and then Nona and then Sierra.
On the October 8th meeting description, the second half,
mm-hmm.
does that mean regulations of e-bikes in other jurisdictions?
You tell me.
I think that would be very valuable.
Okay. Yes, excellent.
Yeah.
So, say that again?
So it just says overview of e-bikes in other jurisdictions, and I was thinking specifically of what regulations may exist or what might be in discussion right now in other jurisdictions so we can learn from others. I mean, I know others are thinking about this. I don't know how many have actually made progress on it.
Yeah, and I think the goal here was to look elsewhere throughout the country and throughout the state on, you know, what jurisdictions are doing generally and who has come up with different approaches, and then look here locally and just kind of see where everyone is at and take a temperature a little bit.
So if that is what it is, it may require more time. That may be one of the more important things that we do to give us a sense of all the work that's already been done to date. So if it's split with the current sites, I have no idea how long that will take. But
it's also my understanding that the County Board of Supervisors has an e-bike item coming for a vote very soon. So we might want to wait until that is voted and then talk about other jurisdictions.
So moving it down in the schedule to provide more time and to accommodate that.
But to repeat, the code area you're here, the code change that is being considered is not applicable to this context. It's applicable only to paved and hard surface multi-use paths like Mill Valley, Sausalito.
For the county.
For the county.
Correct.
Thank you. So I think Sierra was waiting.
No, that wasn't my comment.
Oh, go ahead.
I just wanted to correct it. I think somewhere you need to put in what I would call sociocultural responses. There's a context which is really critical, important, because it's hard to measure, but it plays a major role in the use of mountains.
Thank you.
I'm looking at that, and what I don't see, and maybe it's in enforcement protocols, but for example, if you look at the IJ for the e-bike thing, or if you look at the IJ online for anything, if you look at the comments, where the comments goes is where they go, and it's a lot of disinformation and a lot of other stuff, and what I'd like to see is more education somehow in terms of what, maybe that's an enforcement, but what are we going to do about it? If we're trying to have e-bikes or not have e-bikes, we have to educate the public somehow or bring them along. So how are we doing that? As opposed to, for example, the comments on the IJ, which is a bunch of knee-jerk, you know, this is bad, this is good, this error. But how do we get past that and actually have a dialogue or a conversation? And that's, I'd like to see something about having some kind of education or dialogue in there, or educating the public, getting past the...
The Twitter sphere.
Yeah.
Oh my God, no.
Sam, in following up on Sierra's comment, I wonder if there should be an opportunity for members of the committee to try an e-bike, because I think an awful lot of people have strong opinions who haven't ridden an e-bike, and that would be extremely informative. I'm not sure. Well,
Robert got me on a horse, so I'm sure.
I
bitten the last time I rode a horse.
I noted that at College of Marin, I think on September 21st, I got an email about e-cars and e-bicycles. And there's an opportunity at the College of Marin for all of the general public of Marin to go to the College of Marin. I believe it was 1-4, Ellen, do you
I think so.
I
can check
that?
And be sure.
But here's a public opportunity for people to experience an e-bicycle, and probably manufacturers there would fit you and set you up with a helmet and allow you to experiment a little bit and really see what it's like. And I think that would be extremely valuable in the educational process so that people really know what they're regulating.
I move that we make it compulsory.
We're not under Robert's Rules of Order here, but I think your point's well taken. If there's a flyer or anything that we can circulate for that event to the group, that might be useful.
I have an e-bike that I'll loan to any member of the committee, and would be happy to set them up and so that they're fitted. And maybe that should be done more professionally, but I would be happy to do that with my fellow members of the committee.
Wonderful. Thank you.
It is September 21st, Drive Clean Marin and Community Ride and Drive event from 2 to 5:30 at the College of Marin PE parking lot number 12.
That's the one right across from the Half Day Cafe.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I think, Peter, did you have a comment on the numbers?
Regarding the next meeting, I think it would behoove us to figure out a way to, since we're certainly going to be researching some of these things, we'll almost have to set up some tasks where everybody has to dig in, and there may be some way that we can figure out how to compile or exchange information or have a repository to where some things can be put together or pointing to links or something that can be coordinated. Because this is for getting at so many sources and things, so we can be educating ourselves on other jurisdictions. And as I understand this sort of agenda, that's sort of And that's our target for what we're going to do at the next meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to be ready to hit the road or hit the trail or, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this is something that Sam and I can do to support this group is we've cataloged a lot of information on some of these issues since the workshop has started, and we'll start to put this on the website, and we'll do this ahead of each meeting. So if there's some information that we think it would be good for the group to read before we come so we can have a more focused and informed conversation, we can do that. And then if we need to coordinate something like a test, we can, you know, maybe have a supplemental meeting of some sort.
Thank you.
May I make a suggestion?
We're almost to public comment. If you could just hold that.
Thank you.
Sorry.
I think Sierra and then back over
there. I just want to add, I've got an e-bike parked right up front on the stairs. If anybody wants to check it out, I'll talk to you about it, tell you anything about it. It's got a milk crate on it. It's got saddlebags. I've carried sacks of concrete, tools. I've ridden it up Tam. It's got about 8,000 miles on it, so it gets used. But I've ridden it up Tam, and I do ride it up Tam, but I have the power off. Just because you have an e-bike doesn't mean that you have to have the power on. But in terms of knees and ADA or whatever, I can't pedal up some steep parts. So I'll turn the power on, and I'll get an assist to get up a couple steep spots. But I also need to keep my battery power for when I get home because I live at the top of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, if anybody wants to look at my bike or talk about it,
excellent.
I'm available.
I'll take it. Debbie.
Yeah, there were two issues that were pretty universally mentioned by people in the interviews, and I'm not sure where they fall in there, but they're mm-hmm. important to me to discuss. One is to understand the potential for a permitting system or a licensing system,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't know, you know, just learning about. You mentioned Tamarancho, but just understanding what that might look like.
Yeah.
Where is that in there? Is that an enforcement protocol?
Yeah, that's kind of where okay. I saw it fitting. But
okay, that's fine. I just want to make, I didn't know, these are broad topic areas. But
right.
And the other one is this issue of the challenge of, or understanding the difference between class 1, 2, and 3 visually.
Mm-hmm.
Is that also an enforcement?
Yeah. No, that's under current science.
That's yeah. science.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, it may not be the most accurate term, but that was sort of our catch-all for understanding the mechanism. I'm very conscious that we want to give members of the public a chance to comment as well. Let me go around real quickly, Robert.
So I want to second Noah's request for a social cultural discussion in there. Also, at the next meeting, I encourage 5 minutes to allow everybody to describe the constituency that they have developed. I've reached out to dozens of people already. I think it would give us all some credibility to say who we had talked to, and appreciate that opportunity.
Great. So let me make another pitch and an assignment if you're all comfortable with it. Because this schedule is kind of going to dictate the work that we're doing between meetings, if you have thoughts or modifications to the topics, if possible, if you could send those in to us within a week, is that reasonable?
Yeah.
So I would just ask if everybody could send in any thoughts on the topics that appear within a week, that'd be great. And then any comments on the charter generally within 2 weeks, we'll make those changes and bring a version to the next meeting. Were there any final comments that advisory committee members wanted to make?
What did you decide on October 8th?
So staff's proposal is October 7th, is that right?
Monday,
October 7th.
So hush, choose, can the question I have is public comment.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a reason that it's at the end of the meeting to, because they have to make us, I don't want to make them wait for all that stuff, but generally in public meetings, public comment comes first.
Yeah, so, you know, if this was like a formal board meeting, they often have public comment at the beginning. We did it this way just so that everybody could hear all of what we were discussing and sort of the general charge for the committee before having public comment, but of course open to any process suggestions you all have. My general feeling is that, you know, everybody is educated together at the same time, and that helps inform comments, which is why I generally place it towards the end.
Okay, so Sean, you have a tally there of cards?
Yeah, we have 3 comments, though.
Great.
3, 4.
Or
this is going to dictate how long.
Would anyone like a card? Okay. Want to jump into it, and we have about 2 minutes.
for the comments period, and then John.
Okay, I want to ask.
If you could speak in the microphone for the members that need.
Specifically, want to ask you and Sean, what in terms of ADA certification, what kind of documentation do you need for that?
Could you repeat the question, please?
In terms of ADA certification, what kind of documentation do you require?
At this time, it's a verbal acknowledgement of using the e-bike as an accommodation. If, however, you wanted to use an e-bike in an area that isn't already allowed to bicycles, then we have to have a further conversation. Because then we have to talk about safety issues. Yeah.
But what kind of paperwork? Is there paperwork required?
No, there's no paperwork.
So, what I know about the ADA, I don't think you can inquire as to what a person with disability is.
Right.
You're shaking your head, no?
I was agreeing with you.
Okay, he's agreeing with me. So that's one thing. So I don't have to certify that I'm deaf. I don't have to do that. So that's the answer to that one.
I also want to ask, they bring up the issue of speed, and of course it's 20 miles per hour, but the whole water district is 15. And the issue I see is there's very few signs. The only signs I've ever seen there, aside from the digital one on pavement, was around Lake Lagunitas. So you've got Eldridge where people are going 30. You've got the exit down to Phoenix Lake parking lot where people are going 25. There are no signs. How can you enforce a rule when there are no signs?
So to comment on that, the signs are posted. It is actually the public's job once you set a regulation that you can't claim ignorant to it. So if you're going 20 in an area where we don't have a posted 15 mile per hour speed limit, you can still be cited.
There aren't any posted. The only ones posted, tell me where they're posted other than Lagunitas.
I can't
there
speak
aren't
on
any.
Okay.
Well, it's always to know park rules.
Yes, that's...
Any park, whether it's a state park or...
It's kind of the same thing when you're driving on a road.
You need to know park rules.
You're just leaving a big hole open if you don't have signs.
Yeah, so I think, to point out...
Can we stop for a second? I can't hear a lot of the comments.
Yeah, so...
I'm having to speech read everybody, and I can't hear.
Thank you. So the question was about signage and speed limits. And the answer provided by the district is there isn't signage in a lot of areas, and it sounds like you would like to see more of that.
I would. I think that'll make it safer for everybody, and there won't be an issue between e-bikes and other bikes and hikers. And okay. Right now, downhill on a Sunday, mm-hmm. is a big issue.
A lot of people don't know.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right, next up, Tom.
Yeah. Okay.
Good evening, everybody. I just had a few comments and suggestions. First of all, I want to applaud the board and this committee for stepping up and tackling this issue. I think there's a lot of benefits, but there's a lot of concerns too. So I'm glad that we're moving forward and have the help of Sac State here to have hopefully a transparent, data-driven conversation and ultimately maybe some good recommendations to go before the board. One thing I didn't notice here, and I thought maybe accessibility covered it, is I would hope this conversation would focus on the fact that e-bikes potentially can provide continued or new access to our public spaces. And this would be seniors who maybe don't have a disability, but including people who aren't as physically able. Also, we heard it was kind of a bit of humor at one of the workshops, but a diversity. Minorities maybe need that tool, so I think it should be something that we consider as we're moving forward. This really is a tool that potentially can allow more people in the community to access their watershed. And also there's environmental benefits, and I don't know that that's being focused on here. We heard again in one of the previous workshops about a family that commutes by e-bike to the pancake breakfast, which would require them to use a fire road, and technically right now that would be out of compliance, but that keeps them from driving all that distance, clogging our streets, and of course carbon emissions are reduced by using that device. I also When Sam earlier was talking about an agency on reviewing e-bikes, were you referring to national parks or Marin County parks?
National parks.
Yeah, so Marin County, National Parks is considering, or there is a directive to allow or consider allowing e-bikes in the national parks, and it is definitely something that I think that you guys should look at and learn from, possibly, or they'll learn from you. Let's see. Lastly, I just want to point out that e-mountain bikes, devices that are being sold in our stores now that are being billed as a mountain bike, they're only being distributed or provided in a class one capacity. There are class three bikes, but they're as far as I'm aware, anything that looks like an e-bike, anything that looks like a mountain bike, it's an e-bike. Is just going to be class one, at least that's anything that's sold legitimately at a local store.
Could you say that again, please? If it's a class one.
So all bikes that are called or that are billed as mountain bikes and look like mountain bikes that have the pedal assist are only being distributed here as class one. That's my understanding. There are class three bikes, but of course they could access the trails as well, but they're going to be more like a commuter style bike or something. But I'm just pointing it out because it is, if it looks like a mountain bike and has a motor, chances are it's a class one.
Yeah. We'll get into more detail on that when we
explore
the topic of science of e-bikes.
Tom,
that's about it for time.
What was your name, please?
That's Tom.
Oh, I'm sorry.
His name is
Tom Boss.
My name is Michael. I'm going to talk with Sean about some of the particular comments I have. So I just want to say one thing in view of the shortness of time. I've been doing this a long time. I got a lot of respect for this agency, for the things that they've done, and for this committee for really trying to make a transparent process. This agency is really trying to find out what's happening and what we think. I'm really appreciative of that, and I've been with committees with Crystal and so forth. That's all I have to say. I'll work out the rest with Sean and everyone.
Thanks, Michael. All right, John?
Hi, John Lewis, lifelong Marin resident and mountain biker up until about 6 years ago when I developed a
Can you speak louder, please?
About 6 years ago, I developed a disability, chronic migraines, which actually affect 1 in 8 people. And I wasn't able to ride anymore or get exercise. I was in a dark room a lot of the time. And through doctors and medication, kind of clawed my way back to having a life again, but still wasn't really able to exercise. A friend of mine loaned me his e-bike for an afternoon couple years ago, and I was surprised to see that I could use that and visit those public lands that I've loved so much for so long. And I have since purchased one, and it's been a very useful tool for me personally. I just wanted to this may not be the correct meeting to share that at. I wasn't able to make the other meetings, but as someone with a disability, this has been really transformational for me. So,
thank you.
Just say your name, please. Hello, everyone. I'm Jeff Knaus. I'm a resident in the community. I'm embarrassed to say that I'm 61, and this is the first process that I've sat through, and I think it's a wonderful process. I come at it from a perspective I am right in the middle. I own an e-bike, to be transparent, but I love nature as much as I love riding my e-bike. I have 3 or 4 different bikes. So if I look at this process based on my professional background and experience, if the job can be done the best way that it can be done for the public, for everybody involved, is if you all can really educate yourself. So I made a comment earlier, it was a really simple comment. that the more information you can share amongst yourselves prior to getting here, because if you think about the logistics of all this, there's going to be information flying for a very short period of time. You're going to come up with a recommendation. So if you can take it upon yourselves, and by the way, I really appreciate all of what you're doing to really understand all these issues and jump into these issues and educate each other on these issues. The way that we do it in the corporate world is really simple. Create a Google Doc. So that was my silly, mundane suggestion, is you create a Google Doc, and as you come upon articles of other jurisdictions that have done things, a pro, con, throw it out there, right? This is all about educating yourself and taking your own strong opinions, perhaps, and putting them aside and really, really understanding this. So I think that's one way with the short time frame you're looking at. If I had to do it and I had to educate 20 folks on our teams, I'd just make sure information flowed and people were putting information into that doc so you all get a chance to read it. I think you'd come a little bit more informed to ultimately do what you want to do, which is really you come up with what's best for the group, the entire group, all of Marin and so on and so forth. So,
thank you. What's a Google Doc?
So I don't want to go there after a long day.
What's Google Doc?
Hi, I wanted to thank you for convening this committee. I didn't even find out about this meeting until yesterday, so forgive me if I'm not prepared. I don't know how the public is being notified. I think I would like to have, I guess, earlier notification than that. One of the things that's been brought up, I've been to every other meeting regarding this, is that the representation of people who were representing groups did not make it into the minutes. They were counted as single individuals rather than, for instance, Sierra Club, when I spoke and Nancy Okada spoke, that over 6,600 people were represented there. And that's not even including the Bay chapter. I hope that gets taken into consideration because there's a lot of hikers in the Sierra Club, as you know. Some of the stakeholders that I don't think have been contacted regarding this potential change of use are the tribes, and they have a lot of long-term interest in this. And the other entities that are not represented here are the wildlife. And I don't hear people talking about that. And I hear, you know, oh yeah, we need to get our bikes. We need to address, you know, how we're going to get more people out on the trails. But I don't hear how we're going to protect the numerous endangered species that we have in Marin County, scores of them. And many are slow moving and can't get out of the way, and they're getting run over in many cases. And I've been taking pictures for several years now. So I'm an avid hiker. I've been hiking on the mountain for at least 40 years. I live on Mount Tam, and I would like to see that this group, please, you know, do your best to protect the resource. I think the watershed has a different purpose than just other jurisdictions, and we need to maintain our clean water and our habitat values here. And I think that needs to be raised. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to state for the public's information, you can sign up for notifications when we post agendas. I wanted to make note that the public can sign up online for notification of when agendas are posted for special board meetings such as this. So you can sign up online on our website, and so you'll get the notice. This agenda was posted last Friday. No, we actually posted it officially last Friday on our website, but we emailed people that had contacted us over the last 6 to 8 months. We kept record of your email addresses, and we personally emailed over 100 people yesterday.
Crystal, will you continue to do that throughout this process? Or
the personal emails? I think so, yeah.
Can I also say one thing?
Oh, yeah, I have somebody from staff would also like to comment.
I'm the staff attorney here at the district.
Can you please come close so I can hear you?
I apologize.
Speak in the microphone.
Yeah.
Can you see me? Is this good? I'm the staff attorney here at MMWD, and I just wanted to say for people who received an email yesterday, that could have been due to the fact that this was also noticed as a special board meeting. The reason for that, the notice requirement's only 24 hours, even though that was posted 72 hours in advance along with this notice. You could have also received an email 24 hours in advance just because of the special board meeting, which allows three of our board members to attend, which we're here tonight, which would constitute a quorum. So we're making every effort. We'll take your feedback. We'll do whatever we can to try to give notice to the public. So.
All right, thanks for letting me speak tonight. I got here late, so I'm not sure what I missed, but it was a half hour of introductions, right?
Please, could you please state your name?
15 minutes.
And I'll try to make this brief, but I agree with pretty much everything that I've heard the public say tonight. And I wrote down this note here that says lack of objective data on e-bikes. Well, I can fill that in a little bit for you guys here right now because I've actually started riding one about a year ago due to my disability, which is a lower back issue, and now I have asthma. So this is something I couldn't control, and I was going to quit riding. So my doctor said to me, what are you going to quit riding for? And I go, well, I can't climb hills. I'm walking my bike up the hill. I'm actually getting off and walking the bike up the hill, and my feet are getting wiped out and all this bad stuff happening to my knees. And he said, no, just go down to the bike store, and they've got mountain bikes, because that's what I ride is a mountain bike, and they have batteries on them now. So I checked it out, and I didn't like the first one that they came out with, but then Specialized came out with a new bike called Levo. And it is seamless, it's silent, you don't even know it's an e-bike, it's all built into the frame. And the point I'm making is, I ride up the mountain just like I rode up before, no different. I ride the same speed, except maybe just 1 or 2 miles per hour faster. And then like you were mentioning about the battery saving, I do that all the time so I can go 20 miles or 18 miles instead of 8 or 6 or 5, you know. So to me, what it's done is, at my age, at 64, I've now allows me to see the mountain in a whole new way. I'm actually going places I didn't go before because I'd always run out of energy or water or whatever. And I'm actually having more fun now than I had before. But my legs and stuff, they're in bad shape after the ride, but that's typically with any ride. But my other conventional bike I use on flat riding, but anytime I ride a trail that goes up a hill, I have to use the e-bike. So I don't really understand what the big brouhaha is about it, to be honest. But I did go to Oregon last week, and I can tell you I rode two places, and I rented e-bikes in both places, and they didn't even look twice at me when I said, wait a minute, are you sure it's okay to ride up there? He goes, what do you mean? There's no issues here in Oregon to ride e-bikes. So this is a California, Northern California possibly issue that's really been honed in on, and I know other people are talking about it, but I would just try to leave this with you guys to keep an open mind that technology cannot be stopped. Technology is something that everyone wants to see move forward if it's good for people, and this is definitely good for people to get them on a bike, get them outside, and I can't imagine a better result if you've got some kind of disability and you're riding a bike in nature. What is a better thing you could be doing with your life? I mean, and we have a beautiful now. We don't want to go places we're not supposed to be. I agree with that 100%. But I ride roads mostly.
Thank you.
It's
Thank
just
you.
Completely.
Thank you very much.
It's, yeah, sure. It's I just wanted to make sure though that I mentioned the objective thing. Now, do you guys allow people to speak at other meetings? Is this the first meeting I've ever been to?
Yeah, all of our board meetings have public comment as
so
required.
So I also got an email, I mean a friend from an email that tonight was the night and I didn't know about the meeting until like an hour and a half ago. So is that just because...
It was posted last Friday and it was also in the IJ on Monday morning and we sent out personal emails.
So we have
emails.
To members to be able to get the members to get the emails?
No, you can go online and sign up for notifications of board meetings.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Is that the end of the public comment?
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, I know we've run just a couple minutes over. Just a reminder to committee to the advisory committee members, as well as members of the public, this is the first of a long process. There will be many, many opportunities to comment on some of the really specific issues that have been brought up today. And I would just say, really looking forward to it. I'll turn it over to staff in just a moment. Syria.
Are all of our meetings going to be noticed?
Can you move forward to the mic, Sarah, so I can...
Are all of these meetings going to be noticed as board meetings so that people will get notifications? Do they need to sign up for this specially?
Yes. Yes, we will be notifying, noticing them as special board meetings to allow the board members to attend.
Thank you. So just a quick pitch, again, if you could get any comments on the topics and schedule back to me within a week, I'll make sure that everybody has my email address and we'll work with staff as well on that. And then within 2 weeks, comments on the charter. But let me turn it back over to Crystal and Sean and I think Ben left for any final closing thoughts.
Well, this was very engaging. I hope that everybody continues on the committee because we've got lots of work ahead of us in terms of education and coming to some up with some recommendations that hopefully we can get alignment on. And I'm very encouraged by the conversation tonight, and I look forward to seeing everyone hopefully on October 7th. So.
One final closer, you know, our goal would be to get the charter finalized and so we can post it before the next meeting so that it's on the website. We'll also be going forth with the first topic that we discussed tonight. And then I think at the end of each meeting...
But without the jurisdiction discussion, so...
Without the jurisdiction discussion?
Right, we had a request to delay that. So we might move environmental up, so...
No, I'm not sure about
did
that.
Did we?
Yeah, just Nona's point is it might not be relevant, so...
It's a different issue.
Oh, you're talking about the county's issue.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we are prepared to talk about other jurisdictional rulings.
Yeah, but not what the county's dealing with.
Right. Okay, I understand now. Okay, so we will stay with the originally proposed topic and just not address the county's paved e-bike use, so...
And so we'll finalize this agenda, but at the end of each of our meetings... Perhaps we'll have a check-in point where we can kind of identify for the next meeting, you know, what we really want to have come forth to the group so we can kind of educate ourselves before the following meeting. We can get that online.
I'm not going to be able to make it on October 7th, so okay. Are there minutes?
So that's a great question. We're recording all of these meetings and we're going to produce minutes. We'll put those online as well so you'll all have access to that. We can really kind of have this all recorded and presented. And we'll work to figure out an appropriate device.
Yeah, I'm pretty irritated because I missed a substantial portion of what people are saying. Mm-hmm. And not having these is quite a hindrance.
And we'll provide you with the audio.
I'm sorry for interrupting you. What do you have to say?
We'll provide you with the audio file as well, so you might be able
to... That's a brilliant suggestion, what I don't hear. Really, Sean.
No, we'll have the audio and we'll have the minutes from the meeting, too.
Minutes would be great. I have to read it. I don't listen, so yeah. I can't
and
hear.
It will be.
And I really would like to I'll be pushing this in the meeting so that I can hear what people say. Because I didn't know that the meetings were shifted. I didn't know. So
right. So we'll work with you to get the proper device.
I didn't get finished. It's not only important for me to hear, but it's also important for me to be heard. And it's very important for all of us to be heard because we all have different points and views.
Would it make it easier for you to sit at one of the ends? Would you be
excuse me?
Could you see everybody better if you sat at one of the ends of the tables, for example?
Well, that's why I thought it would be better because it depends where your face is pointing. So if you're going to be over looking that way, I'm not going to see it. So at some point, I could be sitting right next to you and not hear you because you're addressing the person on the other side. So, anyway. I'll be pushing for this for the next meeting so that I hope I really want everybody to know, everybody to participate on this.
We certainly appreciate that, and as Crystal mentioned, we'll work with you one-on-one to make sure that we can provide some additional accommodation, make sure you're able to participate.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any final thoughts, Crystal or Sean?
Okay.
Brad?
No.
All right.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
It doesn't help, so yeah. Oh, well. What's going to happen?
That would be really helpful.
So one person
What is your experience? Is it a rental, or is it something like that?